Welcome to Business Over Coffee International with your host, Sherry Henley. It is a pleasure to be with you today. Sherry Motes Henley, you will find me online. Just simply go to my website and let's get connected and get to know one another. We have an exciting show ready for you today here at Business Over Coffee International. We invite you to interact via chat line or social stream on Twitter. At BO Coffee, at Sherry Henley, hashtag Together Strong. Today's show is sponsored by Inside Info Marketing out of Canada, Sherry Henley Intelligence, iShare Agency, LRD Virtual Admin Service, Custom Growth Group, The Mary Beth Connolly Show, GT Media Group, No Card, and Ridgeway Business Center. We appreciate our sponsors. A shout out to each of those sponsors. Our guest today is Bill Webb, straight out of Memphis, Tennessee, author of many books. The latest is Standing the Final Watch, The Last Brigade. We welcome Bill Webb to the show, and we will be right back to talk more with him and get into the meat of the book. And what Bill is about and what his pen name is. Stay right where you are.
GT Media Group creates video content to power up your company's image. If you need a commercial, web video, promo, in-house instructional video, or anything else, let GT Media Group help you create a cost-effective project. Based in Memphis, serving clients nationwide. GTmediagroup.net or call 901-314-6862. That's 901-314-6862.
Welcome back to Business Over Coffee International. Sherry Motes Henley, your host for today, with our guest, Bill Webb, pen name William Allen Webb, straight out of Memphis, Tennessee. Bill, welcome to Business Over Coffee International Radio.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to hear your voice. I've followed you online, and so now I can put the voice with the name, with the pen name, and with the book. So we are excited to hear more about you. Some of the things that I find interesting is that you are the world's oldest teenager. Tell us about that.
That's true. I am a 60 teen. And
I love it.
My wife keeps telling me that I've never grown up, and I think that's probably true. I try not to anyway. I went to a doctor a couple of weeks ago, and he read my chart, and he said, you just can't be right. You're not 60 years old, are you? And I said, yeah, you know, I've been coming to you for 9 years. You just figured this out? And he said, well, you don't act that old. You act a lot younger than that. And I try to anyway. That's what I try to project in life. I try to do new things. I try to stay young thinking. Most people wouldn't choose to start writing novels at 58, but I did. I had written fiction in the past, and then there was a period of nonfiction. But I think as long as you're trying new things and you're not afraid to fail trying new things, that it keeps you young.
Yes, I agree with that. It's all in the frame of mind that you have. You know, we hear the saying, you're only as old as you think, or you're only as old as you feel. I don't think we need to go by that, because
no,
sometimes
I don't think
that may not work when you're over 40. Bill, I will call you Bill for the interview, but for those who are listening, William Allen Webb is who you need to look up to see all the different genres that have been written by Bill Webb. And Bill, take us on the journey of your latest book that we just talked about. And it actually has a very intriguing title, and I'll let you tell us what it is.
The title is Standing the Final Watch. And that comes from, in the military, I think anybody who's ever been in the military knows that you stand watch. The officer of the watch is the one who is on duty at a particular time in case something, an emergency happens or something arises. And then since the dawn of time, there have been those guys who had to stay awake all night to make sure that predators or enemies did not invade your camp, and that's also standing watch. And the title of the book comes from the fact that the characters in the book are standing, this is it, this is the final watch. After them, there's nobody else. So they are the last protectors of what we've come to know and love as America, as the United States.
So they're really the last one standing. And this is a fiction book, correct? But it's based on fact of things that you have experienced in your life or things that you've read or learned about as a historian. Tell us about that.
Well, it's me. I think when you learn a particular discipline, and in my case it's military history, I don't think that you can ever step back out of that in how you perceive the world around you. So I look at historical currents running through everything that, in our daily lives, even as much as why people act in a certain way, where those customs may have come from, that sort of thing. Excuse me.
Culture, yes.
But as I look at the world we live in today, there's really nothing happening today that hasn't happened a thousand times before. And if you look at where it wound up before, then you can make a projection on where it might wind up now. And in our case, I hope it doesn't, but if it, you can at least make a guess. You can prophesy. And that's where the book came from, is if we stay on our present course, what's going to happen? People who are in charge of our country have computers that have predicted bad things are going to happen. And they believe the computers. So they take measures to try and say, if the worst happens, what can we do to try to rebuild or resurrect when it's all over with?
Right. So they are preempting, which when we tie that into, and we're not going to get into politics, but when we look at the state of the world today and the state of where we are, do you read a lot of that into the book that you've written, Standing the Final Watch?
The book is ripped right out of the headlines. This is, the main character is caught up in the after effects of a terrorist attack. And he's a very he's a world-famous American general, but even he is not immune to what can happen to a terrorist attack. This novel is as non-political as I could make it. The MC has to have a political outlook. I tried to have him walk the line, and you can't do it. It's not convincing. So he has a very definite political outlook. But I tried to walk the line as much as possible as a narrator on not taking sides. This is simply a prophecy of what's going to happen and of what I think may happen through his eyes. So I would say the book is taken straight from what's going on in the world around us now. And I will say also on the technology side, as you read the book, a lot of what you're going to read may seem like science fiction. And there's only one science in the whole book that does not currently exist, and it almost exists. So while you may find some things that are hard to believe, they're all actually already true.
Very interesting. 5 out of 5 stars on Amazon. This book reads, and this is quote, "This book reads like one of those books that force you to stay up all night and try and complete it. It grabs you and holds on to you like your best friend." Wow. That's an Amazon customer. You can read other reviews at thelastbrigade.com, thelastbrigade.com. I encourage you to go there to read more about Standing the Final Watch and to purchase that book as well. We are going to break. We will be right back with Bill Webb, and that would be William Allen Webb Sidney.
Are you outgrowing your home office? Tired of fighting for a plug at the coffee shop? Don't want to be locked into a long-term lease? Ridgeway Business Center provides just as much office as you need. From full-scale office operations to virtual offices to an occasional meeting room, we work for you. Give your business the presence and prestigious East Memphis location it needs, plus a dedicated administrative staff to serve you. Ridgeway Business Center, your office hub, community, service, atmosphere. RidgewayBusinessCenter.com.
Welcome back to Business Over Coffee International Radio. I hope you have your tea in hand. You are listening to Sherry Motinley and William Allen Webb. Bill, back to you. Let's talk about the genres that you write. Over the years, you've written many books. Take us through the journey of the very first book and how you've evolved from that time.
Wow. Can I even remember back that far?
Wait a minute. You are a teenager, remember?
Oh, that's true.
You act like
that's,
one.
That's true. Okay. The first book I wrote was in the mid-80s, and it was a true I was a creative writing student at the University of Memphis at the time, and it was a true hybrid science fiction fantasy novel. I've never actually read such a thing where half the novel is hard science and half the novel is fantasy, and I thought the idea was intriguing, but as I've come to know since then, the first book you read, the best thing you that any writer writes, the best thing you can do with it is stick it in a closet because it's almost never ready for the light of day. I actually got an agent, a big New York agent, high-powered, and she shopped it around, and I got some great feedback. One of my personal treasures is a handwritten note of encouragement from a lady named Judy Lynn Del Rey, who began Del Rey Books with her husband, Lester. It's the science fiction imprint of Ballantine. But it didn't sell. After that, I wrote some more science fiction fantasy type things, wrote a lot of short stories. The market for short stories at that time was drying up. And then came something which I think affects a lot of people. And it's called children. And
oh, yes, absolutely.
Time to write, dried up, work. You know, you have to work more and harder to support the kids and all that kind of thing. So I turned to what had been my lifelong avocation, I suppose you'd say, or some would say obsession, which is military history and World War II in particular. And I am now... I've been working on a book for 10 years on a particular battle in World War II. It's Eastern Front, which most Americans don't really know much about. And it's concerning the battle for Vienna in 1945. I'm about 100,000 words into it. And over the years, I've written a lot of that type of thing, World War II articles. I was in World War II magazine, for example. And I've written other nonfiction pieces. I've written hundreds and hundreds of book reviews that were published on sites specifically dedicated to that. One lamented site was called I Love a Mystery Newsletter, and I probably wrote 500 reviews for them. And
interesting.
So I've written all sorts of things, but I had moved completely away from fiction, and I had not even attempted to write fiction for 30 years when I wrote this novel. It hadn't even crossed my mind to do it.
So what drove you to go back to fiction then, to actually revisit that part of you where you could take all the elements of your life, all of the elements of, maybe not all, but a lot of the headlines, put it into a fictional piece that really speaks to where we are today?
I wish I could give you a good answer. I really do. I would love to have a snappy answer. And so I'm gonna put it this way. I believe, because this happens to me, and I just assume it happens to everyone, that we all have scenes running through our mind that we've imagined. Maybe it's a snippet from a movie. Maybe it's like a very short reel movie that's 30 seconds long. And I had a couple of these, and they always centered around a man standing on top of a castle looking down on a city. I had no idea who he was. I didn't know why he was there. I just knew he was sad. And then there was another one with a man platform, like a ridge, a flat ridge line. I don't know why it was flat, but it was. And he was being attacked by a bunch of enemies, and there was nowhere to go. These had been running through my mind for years and in dreams and things, and I don't know where they came from. So one day in September of 2014, I just decided I was going to sit down and write them out to see if I could make them stop. And I didn't know until I
journaling.
Actually put,
that's called journaling, right? So you decided to sit down and journal about this.
I think that's probably a very good way of putting it. Because if you go back and read the first version I had of the story, I didn't even know who this guy was. I didn't even have a name for him. I just wrote the whole thing anonymously. I did not understand until I wrote the two scenes they were related, that the two people in these situations knew each other. And from there, once my mind told me, you didn't know it, but these people know each other, it started backfilling with story. And this has never happened to me before, where they started telling me the details of their lives and how they got there.
Very interesting.
And
I find it very interesting because I truly believe that people are born innately to have certain gifts. And it sounds like you are very, very gifted. You've proven that to us in writing and writing reviews and also writing your own works and also writing fiction. I also know that you started school in 1973 and did not want to leave and graduated in 2011. Now, you can explain that to us, but you've had a lot of education based on what you do. And so when I translate that to the listeners who are maybe ambitious, they want to write, maybe they have written a book. I got a call from a client yesterday that said, you know, I need to make money on this book. It was published. It's her first. It was published a month ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my response was, your ultimate desire for this book should not be to get rich right now, because that's not going to happen immediately. It should be to get your message out and to get the message of the book out. And then subsequently, you will start to make money on that book. So talk to us about that from the perspective of those who have not been where you are, those who want to be where you are, and how that works in terms of dollars and cents as a writer.
Sure. And just so you know, I'm actually writing a book about how I did this.
oh, good. We need to know.
Well, the story is remarkable because I went from in December, I didn't even have a Twitter account, and now I'm doing rather well with the book. The book is doing quite well. So, and there's a whole lot of things in those 9 months I did that I had never done before. But I won't go down that road today. We'll leave that for another time. I started school in 1973. I went to UT for 2 years, and UT in the mid-70s was an awesome place to go to college. It wasn't such a great place to learn anything because the distractions were constant. And my parents said, if you're going to fail out, you can just do that here in Memphis. It's a lot cheaper. So I came back to the University of Memphis and restarted my college career, I guess you could say. And then wound up getting married before I graduated and had a lot of credits already built up, but life intervened.
Yes, so I understand.
As I was doing that.
I believe many do. I said,
exactly.
I understand, and I believe many do when you say life intervened.
Life intervened. And to be quite honest, I was successful in business and in sales. I was a salesman for a long time, and there was no need of the college education. In those days especially, and we can go down another topic for another day on whether it's necessary today, but in those days, it really wasn't that necessary if you were good at what you did.
Correct.
So once I got out of the business world and came home and was a stay-at-home dad, which I was, and ran a business out of my house, which I did, I didn't need the education. And in 2009, I was on the shores of Lake Luzerne in Switzerland with my best friend, who's a professor over at Memphis, and he knows a lot about the admissions process. And we were talking, and he said, you mean you never graduated? And I said, no, it just didn't seem important. So he designed a program where I could take online courses, and for all the credits I still needed. And I did that, and they were all electives, which means I got to take all these awesome courses on history and just have a lot of fun. So that's why I graduated in 2011.
I love that story.
Well,
that's a great story. It really is.
Thank you. And it's true that and I'll tell this to any older folks who may have a lot of credits on their resume, but who haven't graduated and feel that that's one of the things they would like to accomplish in their life, it's very easy to it's not easy to do, it's easy to arrange. And the school is more than willing to help you, and you can probably take most of your courses, if not all of them, online. And
yes,
I just found
So it's flexible. It's flexible. You can work around your schedule, around your children and your grandchildren and your dogs and your cats and all the things that life brings, especially when you get to be the age that we are.
Exactly. And I just found it to be remarkably – it was wonderful for me. And I have to say also, I think some part of that re-energized that part of my brain that used to learn and may indirectly have led to me winding up writing these books. So you had kind of asked me to tell you about the people, for those who have a book, for example, The Lady That Called You, and
yeah.
how you make money with it, and that your response was absolutely correct. If you're thinking you're going to make a bunch of money with your first book, maybe you will. Maybe you will be Donna Tartt, or maybe you will be Stephen King. But I doubt it. Most people
right.
aren't. You are correct in that you have to build your brand. And what I see from most writers and the mistake they make, and I think this is because you're a businesswoman, and I think you understand this. I've been a businessman my entire life. Writing is a business.
Right.
Your product is you, your work. You are your brand. And to expect people to just know that brand automatically and buy it on faith is asking a lot. I have marketed myself, I would say relentlessly, to get where I am right now. And that's what other people have to do too. So it may seem overwhelming, but and I'm not telling you anything you personally don't know. I'm saying this for the other writers out there.
Sure.
You have to have a social media presence. You have to be on Facebook. You have to be on Twitter. Twitter is the literary center of the universe. Now, if you're not on Twitter and you're a writer, you're doing it wrong.
Absolutely. You're my best friend. Hey, you're doing a commercial for me right now. I love it.
Well, I have to tell you, social media is the sales for my book have been have truly far exceeded anything we had planned. But it's all because of social media. The next step is you have to take up the reins to call the bookstores. You have to do promotions. You have to get your materials printed up. I'm not saying that you have to spend a lot of money. I have not spent $100 promoting my book yet, unless you count gas and, you know, phone call
sure.
time. But
right.
In actual outlay, I haven't spent even $100 yet. But you have to find a way to do it. You have to be creative in how you do it. For example, one of the things that I plan to do is October the 8th, we're going to have a book signing at the Booksellers at Laurelwood, 2 p.m., mark it on your calendars.
And that's right.
For anyone who comes to that event and buys a book leading up to that event, I'm writing a bonus chapter for the book that will be just for you. And
that's great.
You won't be able to get it any other way. There's a couple little loose ends that are in the book, and they're in every book, and I'm going to tie them up in this bonus chapter. But you have to, as
so
a writer.
What you've done with that, Bill, is you've created added value, and you've also created a win-win, a collaborative. You come, you purchase the book, you come and meet me, I'll get to meet you, and then you're going to walk away with this added value of an added chapter. I love it. That's exactly what it takes in this world. Now, there's so much competitiveness out there in the world that we might as well get together and be together strong with collaboration. And we're going to come back with Bill Webb, which is William Allen Webb, if you look him up online. And we're talking about Standing the Final Watch, which is his latest book. I encourage you to go to thelastbrigade.com and purchase the book. Also follow Bill Webb and find out all the things that are going on with him. And when we get back, we're going to talk about Bill's books, which is The Book Guy. So that's going to be interesting. Stay right where you are.
Did you realize you are really one of a kind? Well, now there's a way to quickly and concisely get that across to potential bosses, to clients, to prospects. It's NoCard, the new way to turn your phone into an interactive business card that catches and keeps attention. Go to nocard.mobi/Melinda Reed for more information. That's no, K-N-O, as in let's let the world know you're great.
You are listening to Business Over Coffee International with Sherry Motes Henley, and we are speaking with William Allen Webb. That is William Allen Webb, who is an author of many books and also is the owner of Bill's Books, The Finest Books at the Lowest Prices, right here in Cordova, Tennessee, which is a part of Memphis, a suburb. So, Bill, tell us about this, where it started, and exactly what your store looks like.
Sure. My store is virtual. So once upon a time, I had a physical presence, and for me, business model expired.
Yes, I believe it is expiring. I'm right there with you.
Well, you know, we have wonderful used bookstores in Memphis. We have a wonderful bookstore in the booksellers at Laurelwood, one of the best independents around, and they do sell used books. And we have Burke's Books, another legendary bookstore. But for me, the brick and mortar just it was date stamped. So now my store is completely virtual. But I do sell used books, and I specialize for some reason, I guess it's the way I think, in unusual history. And
yeah.
Odd things, one of the fastest book I ever sold was 12 minutes after I posted it online. It was Dutch grave markers in western Pennsylvania, 1730 to 1760 or something like that. And so I turn up a lot of books like that. I sell a general stock with science fiction and all and a lot of science books, but came about in 1998, that was my first year of business, when I'd been a stay-at-home dad for a few years. We had two small kids. My wife is a very prominent real estate attorney here in Memphis, and she said, look, one of us needs to stay home with these kids, you know, otherwise they're just going to be in daycare from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m., and we were fortunate enough that we could have one of us stay home, and so it was me. And I told her, I said, as long as you can eat my cooking, and, you know, I'll do my best.
I have not killed her yet.
I think she thinks I've tried a couple of times, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, hats off to you.
So in 1998, since I was home with the kids, I started, and my personal book collection was absolutely falling out of the closets. I went through and culled what I could bear to get rid of and started Bill's Books. BillTheBookGuy.com is the web address. And it was just my way of selling books that I love at the lowest possible price. And the way I price my books is very simple. I look up what everybody else is selling them for, and then I underprice them. And that may seem kind of bloody, but, you know, that's the way competition works.
That's exactly right.
And it offers
and
a better
so,
value to the customer.
Do you actually post it on eBay and on Amazon and places like that, obviously, where people are searching, they may land there to purchase your books, or do they have to land on your website?
No, they don't have to land. I quit eBay in 2007 because veteran eBay sellers know this. eBay more or less declared war on their own sellers. And they took away most of the protections that sellers had had. And I simply wasn't willing to play that game. What I do is I upload to sites such as abebooks.com, alibris.com, biblio.com, And they are third middlemen, if you will, who aggregate all the people who sign up on their site and then provide search results from that database. You can also go to a site, if you really want to look for it, do it right, go to bookfinder.com. They search, as far as I know, all of the sites, including Amazon, including eBay, and return results from all of those sites. And so that's how people find my books.
Yes, and so for those who are looking for books, they need to go to buildthebookguide.com. And you
buildthebookguide.com,
have an
yes. Yes.
Yes,
that will have my
they can search for various books. And you said there's a lot of history, sci-fi, that type of book?
I live in Memphis, so pretty much whatever anybody in Memphis has ever bought is what I'm going to find. I do a little travel for it, and I do buy entire collections. For example, a number of years ago, I bought an entire collection of graphic novels and comics, underground comics. So I'm not really locked in, and I find that that's a lot more interesting than just selling the same book over and over again.
Yes, for sure. Collector's items, those type of things. So thing to get acquainted with the business side of Bill. And now we're going to break and we're going to come back and talk more with William Allen Webb about Standing in the Storm and the many worlds of William Allen Webb. It's going to be very interesting. Stay right where you are.
GT Media Group creates video content to power up your company's image. If you need a commercial, web video, promo, in-house instructional video, or anything else, let GT Media Group help you create a cost-effective project. Based in Memphis, serving clients nationwide. GTMediaGroup.net or call 901-314-6862. That's 901-314-6862.
You're listening to Business Over Coffee International. Sherry Motinley here with Bill Webb, Standing in the Storm, the many worlds of William Allen Webb. Bill, I see here that you say we sleep at night because America's armed forces, police, and firefighters never do. And you know as well as I do and all of the people who are listening that there is such a divide now when we talk about police officers and so forth. And so how do you deal with that when you make statements like this?
Well, the only way I can respond to that, Sherry, is that I really don't respond to it. I understand that there are people out there who may feel otherwise. And since we live in America, they have their right to their opinion. But that's mine. And I'm a very strong supporter of law enforcement. That doesn't mean that every cop on the street or every firefighter is a great person.
Right.
There can be bad
apples.
Many
are.
Anything.
Many are.
The vast majority, and I know a lot of cops, and I've known some firefighters, and even the ones who may be flawed as human beings, which we all are, but I mean really flawed, are great at their job. They really take their job very seriously. So. I can only tell you that I would not want to be in the position of having to make a life or death decision with no real time to react. You know, that's just not something I would do. So I admire people who can, and our armed forces, personally, I think our teachers, police, firefighters, and armed forces should be the best paid people in our society. That's just my personal opinion. But they've got the most on the line, and they are the ones who our future well-being rests on them. They stand between us and chaos.
I agree that I appreciate so much those who go out and fight for us, however that looks, every day to maintain peace in our society. And then I see the flip side of people who are abused by those authority figures. And so the best way I believe that we can deal with that, it really stands right there in the title of your book, and that is Standing in the Storm. And I go back to my roots, which is the Bible, and I'm being totally politically incorrect by even bringing that up. But the bottom line is that when we've done all we can, we stand. And so we stand for what is right, however that looks, whether it's for the police officer or whether it's for the family that was abused by the police officer. If we stand for what is right, and I agree with you that many people who fight for us, their families don't sleep at night. They don't sleep at night. And all of those, remember that police officers, armed forces, they are a variety of cultures. So we are dealing with a lot of different people that go out there, and my hat is off to each and every one of those that go out and fight for us and do it the right way, do it the way that with kindness in their heart, but yet knowing that they have to respond at the snap of a finger. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And you said your word, I've said mine. And now we're going to talk about thelastbrigade.com, which is standing in the storm, and many of the words. So we just talked about some of the words that William Allen Webb has said, and also known as Bill Webb. And Bill, you have many works, many reviews. Let's talk about some of the books you've reviewed, and let's pick your top two.
Oh, my goodness. My top two books. Well, in my opinion, the greatest novel ever written in the English language, at least, and I'll limit that to the 20th century because I'm really not that versed on previous literature. The greatest novel writers should read is Lord of the Rings. And specifically, The Hobbit is actually a completely different book written in a completely different tone, despite the movies. If you want to include them, The Hobbit is probably one of the greatest children's books because it's written for 10-year-olds that's ever been written. It's just unbelievably brilliant. Lord of the Rings is one of those books as a writer that you should study and yet never try to emulate. Ursula K. Le Guin said, never try to out-Tolkien Tolkien because you can't do it. So there's a tendency when you read great books like that to try and sound like that author. What you should instead do is study sentence structure, study how he describes things, and that sort of thing, the details that he picks out of his imaginary world that makes it so vivid. Because I've never found any world anywhere that is so beautifully and imaginatively described as Tolkien's. To take Middle Earth and make it so vivid in everybody's mind is just remarkable through words. Book two, wow. I'm going to throw out a science fiction novel that I've probably read 30 times, and I challenge anybody who reads this book, I challenge anybody who likes crime novels to read the first 30 pages, because although it's hardcore science fiction, well, it's really fantasy, the first 30 pages could be one of the best crime novels you've ever read. It's called Nine Princes in Amber, and it's by a guy named Roger Zelazny. Zelazny wrote there were five books in the original series, Amber, and then there were five in a second series. And Zelazny is the exact opposite of Tolkien in that he describes things in a way with very few details, and yet it's just as vivid. He's a minimalist who can really – it's like if Hemingway used adjectives. And he's just absolutely brilliant. And the first 30 pages of that book, if you can read those and put it down, more power to you. Because if I pick it up, if I'm just walking by and I see the paperback and pick it up and start reading it, I'm done. I'll have to read the whole thing.
Well, one of the things that I really admire about you, Bill, is that when I go to thelastbrigade.com and I see your reviews, they are almost endless. Crime fiction review, audio book and course reviews, fantasy, science fiction, history book reviews, horror, dark fantasy reviews, and the list goes on and on, even movie reviews. So for the listeners, I encourage you to not only go to this site and purchase the book, Standing in the Storm, but also go to the site and see all of the works that are here. We also have Bill's works, which is fiction, nonfiction. We have the blog. We have future projects. Let's talk about that. What are your future projects?
Boy, I love that question because I've always got too many, and I know Standing in the Storm will be the second book in the Last Brigade series. Standing the Final Watch is the first one. Standing in the Storm is the projected title for number two, which, by the way, is already written. And it needs
okay,
editing.
Okay, I apologize for that oversight, actually. You are correct. The book people can purchase now, Final Watch, and Standing in the Storm is the upcoming book. For the record, let's correct that.
And then after that book's already written. I've edited it a couple of times. Now I need to really start the serious edit, as you can relate to. You know, the manuscripts go through many edits. And then get it to the publisher where she will make me bleed with her edits. And then after that...
make you bleed.
Yes.
I love that.
She warned me to have the before the edits for Standing the Final Watch to get some bandages and have them ready. I'm so fortunate because my publisher is just phenomenal, and they anyway I could rave about how great they are. Standing in the Storm comes book three in the series, which I'm about a quarter done with, and it's called Standing at the End. So that will be the first trilogy of what I hope is going to be a long running series. I am writing a book called, and I don't really have a title for it yet, Zero to Hero is my story of how I went from not even having a Twitter account in December of last year. No Twitter, no Facebook page for my book, no website.
Right.
TheLastBrigade.com has come about in the last 5 months, and I've done 100% of it myself. And so anyway, it's the story of all the things I did leading up to where the book is now, which according to the publisher, it's a borderline Amazon bestseller. So we'll see.
That is amazing. So your journey through Join the Brigade One, which is your handle, at Join the Brigade One on Twitter, your journey of building that, you now have over 2,000 followers, and you just started this in January. So that
yes, I did.
That's amazing, and I study these types of growth patterns, and so that's an amazing growth pattern, and I look forward to reading that book you're talking about when it comes to the social media, the branding aspect of really it's your messaging. It's how are you getting your messaging out there, and how are you doing it specifically targeted as an author, and I think that will speak to so many people, Bill.
Well, I hope so, Sherry, because I honestly want every author I know to succeed. This isn't a competition. This isn't about me versus them. I have a very good friend on Twitter who had a book. She'd been really trying to sell the book through Twitter events, which is how I sold my book. And she just couldn't ever get enough interest. So she and I worked on her Twitter account, on her tweets for the events, and I told her, I said, you don't have anything for them to grasp onto. It's a historical romance that has elements of fantasy. And I told her, I said, what you need to do, this is set in Jamaica in the 17th century, you need to introduce the word voodoo into your tweets. And so she did. And the next day she had six publishers ask to see her manuscript. And so
you're actually talking about hashtags right now, am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. Are you familiar with the literary Twitter events for books on Twitter?
Well, I saw some of the things that you were talking about. Tell us about it.
All right. In February, there's an event, and there's dozens of these. The rules are all a little bit different, so you have to be careful. I'll just tell you about the one where I sold my book. The hashtag is hashtag PIT, P-I-T, the number two, pub. Pit2Pub 16 for 2016. And what this is during a 12-hour period, you can write one tweet every 2 hours. Publishers are watching these tweets, and they're looking for anything that might spark their interest. And if they like it, they'll hit the heart on Twitter, And that means send me your work according to my submission guidelines. And
fantastic.
So every 2 hours you get to send out a tweet. Now, of course, 140 characters minus all the hashtags, you've got about 120
right,
characters.
And so forth,
to,
yes.
Yeah, you've got about 120 characters to describe your whole book. So obviously you're just, they're looking for who can be clever enough to spark their interest, because that speaks to whether or not they might like your book. So I did that in my very first contest. I had four publishers ask for the manuscript. Two offered me contracts, and then I took the one that I liked the best. That's why earlier when I said that Twitter is the literary center of the universe, there's a hashtag, MSWL, that stands for Manuscript Wish List. This is where agents and publishers in real time post what they would like to see in front of them. They may wake up that morning and say, and this actually happened the other day, one of the agents woke up and said, if you've got, they had a picture of a 17th century small cabinet filled with poison, and it was made to look like a book. And they said, if you've got a historical romance that's got this in it, I want to see it right now. And publishers will get on there and say, we really need more young adult urban fantasy, that type of thing. And that's
so
an invitation.
Yes. I mean, it's actually a diamond in the rough, because when you look at Twitter, it's so massive that it scares people, especially people mm-hmm. that don't understand it. They are just writing their first. They're also afraid of rejection. You have so many other people in that same genre, in that same area of insecurity, so to speak, that it's okay, because you're all, and it's, well, take it or leave it. Either they respond or they don't. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I like is on your website, thelastbrigade.com, the interviews under press, for those of you listening, go to this, and there is an interview posted here that says, how hashtag Pit2Pub and Twitter helped me get published. And so you talk specifically about this in this interview. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct.
That's fantastic.
And
so, go ahead.
No. All I was going to say is that you mentioned fear of rejection, and this goes back to writing as a business. You have to disassociate yourself from the emotional response of rejection. You have to. Nobody likes being rejected. I don't like being
right.
rejected. But it's a business. You have a product. Just because if the waitress brings a tray of desserts to your table and you say, no, I don't want the chocolate cake, do you think that's going to hurt her feelings? No. She doesn't care. She's just, you know, if you want it, great. If you don't, that's fine. You have to look at
that's
it the
right.
same way. If somebody rejects you, they weren't the right partner.
Right. And so hashtag don't take it personal. That's very important. And let me, for the record, specifically for the listeners, when you go to thelastbrigade.com, actually you will go to what they're saying, and under that is a drop down, and you will see interviews. You'll click there to be able to find the interview about the hashtag and the areas of Twitter that William Allen Webb has used in order to pole vault him with his latest book. And we will be back to wrap everything up on Standing the Final Watch in just a moment.
Are you outgrowing your home office? Tired of fighting for a plug at the coffee shop? Don't want to be locked into a long-term lease? Ridgeway Business Center provides just as much office as you need. From full-scale office operations to virtual offices to an occasional meeting room, we work for you. Give your business the presence and prestigious East Memphis location it needs, plus a dedicated administrative staff to serve you. Ridgeway Business Center, your office hub. Community, service, atmosphere. RidgewayBusinessCenter.com.
Welcome back, Sherry Motz Henley. You can find me at sherrymotzhenley.com. I would love to connect with you. Also, visit businessovercoffee.com and keep up with what we're doing there in the digital world, hashtag digital strategy, hashtag together strong. We are talking with Bill Webb, who has a pen name, William Allen Webb. Standing the Final Watch is the book, And I will read a small excerpt about the book. And let's just take this little paragraph. It says, 50 years later, he, talking about the main character, wakes to find the USA destroyed and predatory warlords roaming the ruins, stalked by assassins bent on seizing his command for their own purposes. And Griff, the main character, has to prepare for war while murder. Sounds interesting. Bill, give us the last word and what you would like the listeners to walk away with today.
I would like the listeners to walk away vowing that they're going to read more books in the coming year than they did the year before. And they're going to engage their mind. And if you read my book, great. I hope you love it. If you don't, that's okay. Read something. Engage yourself. Get out in the world and learn that. The last thing I think I want to leave with, Sherry, is for writers in particular or any creative spirits, social media is where you need to be. Don't be afraid of it. I'm your age. I'm a baby boomer, even though I'm a teenager. It's kind of an anomaly. But
you're the youngest baby boomer.
I am the youngest baby boomer in the entire world. Don't be afraid of social media. And if you need a trainer, I bet I know where there's one that could help you.
Hey.
Hey.
Thank you so much. I think that
you're
would be
welcome.
Me. Or am I jumping the point?
No, that's who you're who I meant. But seriously, it's just so much easier when you do this, and there's so much support available on social media. I've met people through Facebook that I haven't seen since I was in grade school, and it's because I was looking for them, and they found me because I was talking about the book, and other people said, hey, you need to get engaged with this.
And
so,
to that point, engagement, like you said, engagement, that word is so important. Not just splashing stuff online, but engaging with people so that they get to know you and about your work. And Standing the Final Watch, the reason why you are on this show right now, Bill, is because you took the initiative to reach out to me on social media and said, hey, I just came out with this book. Would you be interested in the interview? I said, absolutely. So here we are. So it's that easy. And thank you for letting our listeners know that it's that easy. Now, writing the book is not that easy. So my hats off to you for your life's work that you have done. And thank you so much for taking time to come on the air with us and share thelastbrigade.com, Standing the Final Watch. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Sherry.
For the listeners, we will be back, and when we come back, we will come back with great guests and great topics that you will not want to miss. So make sure that you follow us at BO Coffee, go to businessovercoffee.com, and keep up with the next interview that we will have. We're not going to tell you what it is because we are in the planning stages of something really big. This is Sherry Motes Henley. Go to my site, sherrymoteshenley.com. And there you will find all the sites associated with us, including Business Over Coffee, Come Into Your Own, The Movement, Sherry Henley Intelligence, and iShare Agency. We are together strong because together we are stronger. God bless you.